I don't think we realize as service providers, every day we have that opportunity. I realize that's an extreme situation, but every day there's people who come for birthdays that are disappointed that we can help turn around. There's guests who really want us to sell them the right ticket, not just sell them the tickets that's going to make us the most money, but the one that's going to be best for their family. And I believe that guest service, true guest service, is a craft, and it's a craft of empathy and concern for other people.
Welcome to the Attraction Pros Podcast, where we discuss the latest trends and challenges facing the attractions industry today.
We chat with some of the top leaders in the field and provide resources that will help develop your career in this great industry.
I am Josh Liebman. I am obsessed with the guest experience and helping attractions make that their top priority for success.
And I'm Matt Heller. I am passionate about organizational effectiveness, leadership development, and employee engagement.
Now sit upright, hold on tight, and get ready for the Attraction Pros Podcast. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
It's fan-double-tastic. Josh, how are you?
Double-tastic.
Man, yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Me too, actually. I am maybe fan. No, I'm not going to say triple-tastic. I don't want to overshadow the fantasticness, but I'm really excited for our guest today. But before that, quick question for you.
Sure.
Have you ever accidentally gotten what turned out to be an amazing job or job opportunity?
Accidentally? Yes, I have. My very first job in the industry, I wouldn't say it was an accident, but it was not anything I was looking for. So my very first job as a ride operator at Canobie Lake Park, I just didn't want to go back to the grocery store that I was working at, during high school. And I was back for my first year of college. And my mom said, "Hey, Canobie's hiring." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I just kind of happened to go down there. I don't know if I'd call it an accident, but it wasn't anything that I was doing on purpose or for any strategic reason. So that could be, you know, in that category. How about you?
Yes. First of all, I mean, awesome story. You were just like, Canobie's hiring, or your mom said that. And now, boom, huge career in the theme park industry.
33 years later.
Yeah, no, that's pretty impressive that it dates right back to that. For my story, many years ago, you and I both worked at Universal Orlando. We were actually both working there at the same time. And I was in attractions operations working at Men in Black Alien Attack. And I loved being a ride operator. I had only done that, up until that point. Before Universal, I was a ride supervisor at Hard Rock Park. I did attractions operations at Magic Kingdom, did ride operations at Cedar Point. And I 100% thought that my life calling was pushing that green button and dispatching those guests and providing that amazing ride operations experience. So one day I walked into work and I was at that time a relief team leader. So if you're got status lead, like you're always in a leadership role, relief team, sometimes you would fill in. And so I came in just for a regular attendant frontline shift. And the team leader of that day, I believe it was Derek, he said to me, "We just got a phone call. Guest service communications is short staffed today. And instead of pulling someone else from guest services, they're calling around to attractions ops to see if anybody just wants to go like fill in there for 3 hours." And I said to him, "What is guest service communications? I don't know what that means." He's like, "Well, it's like guest services, but you're going to be in an office." And I was like, "Well, how is that guest services?" Well, it's, you know, guests are calling, you like answer emails and things like that. And I was like, I get to go just sit down for a few hours for today instead of, you know, being in this fast-paced environment. And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay." So I walked all the way. Now, Men in Black, as you know, is on like the far end of, or close to the far end of Universal Studios. The guest services office was up towards the front of the park. So I walk all the way there and I'm, you know, dressed as Agent J and walk in. I think maybe I had like a hoodie or a jacket or something I put over it. And I just shadowed another team member and picked up the phone and started answering phone calls on behalf of Universal Guest Services and was just chatting with guests and asking questions of, you know, what's the meal deal policy today, and what's the, you know, what's the retail exchange procedure, or just anything. If there was about attractions, I could answer it all day long, but I didn't know much outside the attraction space. So the supervisor who was working that day, his name was Matthew. He pulls me aside. He goes, "Josh, can we go take a walk?" And I said, "Okay." Like, did I just ruin everything? Like, am I just going to lose my job because I just came to fill in here? And he goes, "I'm hearing you on the phone with guests, and you clearly have this guest service focused attitude." And he goes, "I want to introduce you to someone." And he brought me into the office of none other than, I'll give you one guess.
Linda Rose.
And Linda goes, "Josh, Matthew was just telling me that you would make an amazing addition to our team." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And she goes, "You're probably doing amazing in attractions operations, but I want you to come join the guest communications team as part of guest services." And so I walk all the way back to Men in Black and, you know, was just sort of thinking about, you know, what this is, and started talking with my coworkers and my supervisor and other supervisors in the area, and really weighing out the pros and cons. My direct supervisor agreed with my mentality that I was destined for attractions operations. I remember she even said, you don't want to be sitting in an office behind a phone. You want to be front of house, on stage, working with guests. And I said, I definitely do, but maybe I want to do this too. And I ultimately ended up making the leap over to guest services. And everything that you have heard me talk about, or that our audience has heard me talking about, you know, in terms of guest experience, just guest service philosophy, delivering a superior experience, service recovery, anything in that realm traces directly back to the time that I spent in guest service communications at Universal. And I wasn't there for that long. I was there for a couple of years. I got promoted about halfway through and then got the opportunity to go open Legoland and work for Pixel. But I carried all that with me, and not just my time working there with that team, who was phenomenal. I'm still very good friends with many of them, but specifically my boss who oversaw that team. And that was everything that I learned from Linda. So I am so excited. I know this is a very roundabout way of saying I am very excited to talk to Linda Rose today on the Attraction Pros podcast.
So we just got to hear your sort of guest service superhero origin story about where all this came from, starting
as, you want to call it that.
Starting as Agent J, going into an accidental position in guest services communication. You know what's kind of funny about that, just to connect a few dots? When I would teach guest service classes at Universal, I would tell people about the impact of what happens when someone is at an attraction or somewhere in the park and they get upset or they have a service failure and they have to walk all the way up to guest services. And my example was always Men in Black. Can you imagine being at Men in Black and having something go wrong and they say, "Go to guest services," and then you have to walk all the way up, and how much more upset you will be when you get to guest services and those poor guest services associates have to deal with that now because of that long walk and how much more upset they got. So just connecting the dots with the Men in Black.
That is a perfect parallel.
Yeah. But I also got to work with Linda Rose. Now Linda Rose Hayes, and we got to work together as I was doing some of those service classes, because I would bring in people from guest services to talk to people about the impact of what they did out in the attractions or in merchandise or in food and beverage and what happened when they got to guest services, but also to talk a little bit about what people's options were that they might not have known about that they can do at an attraction or at a merchandise store or at a food and beverage location that they're going to do at guest services anyway. So why not save them that walk? And it was brilliant when she would come in and, you know, her service heart was very, very evident, and she could empathize with people and just really be able to show people the power that they had to provide a great experience.
Yeah, I think we could do an entire podcast episode on how great it is to work with Linda Rose Hayes. So let's actually tie that into what she's doing now. She just launched her new business, Hospitality Connect, where she provides concierge services to hotels and resorts. and also worked with them to arrange transportation, logistics, and maintenance companies and housekeeping, and being able to connect them with those right operators. And I am pretty sure she brought her guest service philosophy with her, with everything that she has done since Universal, since that time, and her background as a nurse even before that. We're going to talk about all of that. And the way that she looks at guest service and guest experience is very profound. So one of the reasons why I'm really excited to have her on the podcast is, A, the opportunity to be able to catch up with her and maybe share some of those stories from when we worked together. But I think that this is going to be a really important episode for anyone who wants to continually challenge and improve their own guest service skills and guest service philosophies, because Linda really brings a lot to the table.
And I would also say anybody who wants to challenge their own leadership in guest service and leading a guest service team and empowering guest service team, she has some amazing things to say. So I say, let's get right to this interview with Linda Rose Hayes. Linda Rose Hayes, operating partner at Hospitality Connect of Florida. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Attraction Pros podcast. Linda, we are so excited to talk to you. How are you today?
I am excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We both know you, Josh and I know you from different parts of our careers. So this is going to be really exciting. Of course, one of the things we'll ask you in a little bit is your time working with Josh. But before we get into that, tell us a little bit about Linda and your current role and what you're doing.
Well, I opened a new business and it's called Hospitality Connect. It has several different facets to it. So similar to my previous role, we provide concierge service within the resort. So if you went into the Waldorf Astoria today and needed a concierge, that would actually be one of my team members. And many of them came from my previous employer with lots of experience. But there's other facets of my business as well. So I offer connections for hotel partners who need to find a transportation partner, a new IT person. They need maintenance on their resorts, because many of the times they decrease their staffing for the maintenance and they use outside sources. I can help the hotels connect to all of those things.
Sounds like kind of a one-stop shop for so many different services for, you know, for the hotels or for the operators. Who is it or what is it that they normally would need to outsource to a company like yours, to Hospitality Connect, versus what they'd be managing in-house? And how do those two tie together?
So that's a great question. If you're talking about the concierge service, we provide either complimentary or very discounted concierge service. Possibly even we would pay or do a revenue share with the hotel, depending on the volume at the hotel. And one of the great things I think about having an outsourced company like mine is we can find exactly the team member to fit your desk. So if you have someone at your desk or your location and 3 weeks later you say, you know, I really need someone who's bilingual because we have so many Spanish speaking guests or Portuguese speaking guests, we can move people around to get exactly what you want that fits your hotel. Where if a hotel hired a concierge, they wouldn't have that ability.
So Linda, you know, thinking about where you are now, like I said, Josh and I both worked with you at Universal, and you've had a pretty interesting career starting in nursing and doing all kinds of different things. Can you kind of walk us through that process and how that actually led to Hospitality Connect?
By accident. I think my entire career was an accident. So I went to school for nursing. My plan was to spend my life nursing. And I loved serving people. That part of the nursing environment was wonderful. The long hours were fine. I enjoyed it. But my father became really ill. And so I decided to take a year off of nursing to take care of him through hospice. And when I did, within a week, I was bored. I needed to get out of the house. So I thought, oh, I'll go work at one of the theme parks for a day or two. Just, you know, work at an attraction or something. Walked into the HR department at Universal Orlando, and it wasn't long after that that I began overseeing many of the departments and then became the general manager at guest services.
So what's the connection then between the hospital and the hospitality as far as what you were able to use from that nursing background while going into Universal, and now that you're still able to I would say, tap back into with Hospitality Connect?
That's a good question as well. Thank you. I think for me, it was, I learned how to be giving, how to be empathetic, how to listen to my patients. And that all carried over seamlessly into my new role at Universal. I was surprised how much they have in common. When you're taking care of someone, whether it's because they're ill or because they had a poor experience or they need some assistance to get into the park, it's all people in need. And so those two positions are more alike than people realize.
Yeah, I really like how, you know, sometimes we talk about it, but not often enough, that hospital and hospitality, you know, are very, very closely related as a word, right? And then the concepts are very closely related. And I remember, you know, back at Universal, where we met was when you were working in guest services, and I was doing a class on service, and we had people from guest services come into that class. And one thing that you used to always talk about that really stuck with me was when you're teaching people about guest service and providing recovery, one of the things you said was, it's not your money, because people were so protective of the organization, protective of the company. So can you talk a little bit about that philosophy and how you use that to train guest service associates?
Absolutely. And I still have that philosophy. I will tell you, it's a much harder now because it is my money, but I tell the team members the same thing, that they it's not theirs and they need to do what's right. So, and I think you actually helped me get there as well, Matt. I have to give you some credit to learn to communicate to the team that they're not taking that money out of their pocket. They're doing what the company wants them to do, which is satisfy the guest. And I think you're right. I think they were protective, but I think some of it was deciding whether a guest was deserving or not, which really isn't our role. Our role is to satisfy the guests within the company's requirements. And so that phrase of it's not your money, it's not out of your pocket, really seemed to resonate as an understanding with the team. That's why we used it so much.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to make that distinction of having the question or the debate of, is this guest worthy enough of compensation or of service recovery? And usually, you know, what we see is that it comes not with a poor intention, but actually with a lot of passion and pride that someone might take for the business, that when they are working with the service recovery situation, that they want to really go on the defense for the business that someone is making, what could be accusations against it, or just saying that they had a poor experience, but they know that the guest could have had a better experience, and they want to explain why, and they want to explain what the guest could have done better. And then going back to that mentality of, it's not your money. How do you balance that line of making sure that you're not having that conversation of, does the guest deserve this or not, but also making sure that you are protecting the best interests of the company and not just pulling cash out of the register at every opportunity?
It's really important. And I think the most important thing is to get all the team on the same page and to allow them. I have the most amazing team. I don't have to worry about whether they will take care of the guests or not, because we've been together so long and we all have the same core value. But you do have to discuss together, what is fair compensation? Where is the guideline? And when do I have to ask permission? And I have very little that they, other than if they want to write a $1,000 check, they need to call me. But other than that, I really trust their judgment. I believe that long-term, I'm in this for the long-term, right? Not for short-term gain. That providing recovery is part of the cost of doing business, and making guests happy is what our hotels need us for. Otherwise, they don't really need us there.
Yeah. So you brought up something interesting that I've always known you to be a great team leader and bringing people together. But so many of your folks are not together, right? You have concierges and different people around at different places. So you're running a lot of remote teams. So can you give us a little insight into how you bring those folks together when they're not physically together?
So we have all of the normal tools, right? We have teams and we have chat rooms and that kind of thing. But this team is really a family. So just last week, one of the team members said, I want everybody over for dinner. And every single person showed up that was in town. That's the kind of bond that they have. And I think that COVID has taught us all to be separate, but together. And that's been one benefit of COVID. There are lots of negatives, but a benefit is that we've learned to remotely still be connected. because they work alone. I don't have any two-person desks.
Yeah. Linda, you're speaking really highly about your team, and I'm wondering if we can actually maybe dissect that a little bit. You talk about how everyone is a family and that you all have the same core values. What are some of the inputs to, I would say, build that foundation and that culture that you're creating, and then also to sustain it as well?
Well, I don't know that I can take any credit, but I will tell you the things I've learned from my mistakes. And one of the main things is listening and realizing that other people may and probably do have a better answer than you do if you just ask the people who are doing the job. So the team, before we even take on another property, which we just did, we just joined Orange Lake, we sat together as a team on a call similar to this one and said, will this work for everyone? Is it too far from someone's home? Is it the hours what we can work? Do we think the profitability will be right? So all of the team members have buy-in if they think it's a good idea. And unless there's consensus, we don't move forward. So that's new for many of the team members. And I had one of them call me recently and he said, I've been in hospitality my whole life. And this is the first time I really felt like I was owned part of the company. And I want them to feel that way and hope to reward them at the end of the year that way too.
Yeah. You know, to foster that kind of input, I think is so critical. And it really does foster a lot of buy-in and people feeling ownership over that. I think what I see is there's a hesitancy to do that because if I ask for somebody's input, I have no idea what they're going to say, or I've got my sights set on this. And then if I ask Linda and Josh's opinion and they have something else, they say something else. Now I've got to go a different direction or I have to put my plans on hold and that's going to put me behind schedule or whatever. So how do you get over some of those barriers of either not knowing what someone's going to say or just thinking that this is going to take you in a completely different direction?
I think that's the best part is I don't know what they're going to say and they do take me in completely different directions. So many of the resorts that we're in now, I had no plans for. And the team said, you have to go get this one. And I thought, really? And I had no plans to do that at all. But after they're talking to me about their reasoning and giving me ideas that I hadn't had before about how we could make it work, we did it and it's working. So I think for me, not having that idea of this is what I plan to do and there's no way around it, I'm open to anything other than, you know, base salary, that kind of thing. We are, and even that we discussed. We met together before I opened the company and I said, this is what I can afford. And they came back and said, we think you can afford this, but we'll promise you that. And I did. I gave them the salary that they wanted, which is more than what they were making in their previous positions, which is great. And they've been worth every penny because they have given to the company so much.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Can you share a little bit actually of how you started the company and the process of getting it off the ground and up and running?
Sure. I keep saying accidents. It was another accident. I had no plans to do this. And when I left my previous employer, when I worked for Expedia, when I left them, some hotel managers had reached out to me. And at that time, I really didn't have any plan to start the business, but they said, oh, you should start your business. I had several GMs say, we'll finance the business for you, which was surprising. And I really had no thought to do that. And then in early December, there was an announcement of the closure for that division. And I was already set up with many people who wanted me to have the concierge service for them. So between that and team members who called me when the announcement was made and said, please open your own business, we will come work for you, which was shocking to me. It just happened. And anytime I was really hesitant, I have an amazing husband who was so supportive. And I would say, I don't think I can do this. And he would say, you absolutely can do it. You've already done it. Now you're just doing it with your own team for your own income. And that was really powerful.
Yeah. So what were some of the, initial challenges or obstacles that you faced? Because any new business faces obstacles, right? So I'm curious what some of those were for you.
Well, I think for me, I didn't realize the amount of detail that I was going to need to be. I'm not a detail person. I've always been a big picture thinker. Don't make fun of me, Josh. Josh knows that very well because he used to help me with details. But I was not aware of how many licenses I would need, how many people I would need behind the scenes for accounting and bookkeeping. And once I got one license, oh, you need this other license and you need this other. I that was a huge challenge and continues to be. Because even as I just have a new team member joining today, and we had to get the email set up and getting that, all of those things take time and effort and knowledge that I've had to learn as I've gone. So luckily I have very gracious people around me who've been supportive when I mess it up.
That's great. So we touched a little on the concierge aspect of the business. Can you talk about the other components of it as well, the housekeeping, maintenance, sure. or transportation, sure. and opportunities and challenges that those present by providing those services to the hotels?
Well, I don't provide the service. I simply connect the two pieces together and they provide it. So I would think the biggest problem for me or challenge for me has been having so many great partners that wanted to join and really wanting to have a limited number of partners to offer. If I offer a hotel 16 different transportation partners, they could have done that on their own with Google. So I really want to have the best and the brightest. When I looked at the maintenance partner I was going to work with, I wanted one who had worked nationwide, who'd worked with flag properties like Hilton and Marriott, and I wouldn't have to be concerned about them understanding the insurance requirements and all of the training that goes into working at one of those high-end properties. And those are the reasons I've chosen a few, but that does make it hard. When you've been around a long time, as you both have, you know everyone and you want to help everyone. That's just not possible for this model. The other piece I didn't talk about is I also work with resorts who don't want or can't accommodate a full service concierge. So there's not enough ticket sales, there's not enough volume. I actually connect them with brokers, timeshare brokers, vacation home sellers. Again, I'm not contracting directly, but I connect them with someone who can provide them the income that they're looking for the desk that's in the lobby.
Linda, I'm curious. I know a little bit about that concierge model, but I'm guessing that there's also people that know even less than I do. So can we just talk a little bit about sure. that concierge and what they do, and specifically within your business, what they're tasked with on a daily basis?
If you were to walk into a hotel, luxury resort with a concierge, and anything that you would ask them, from holding the luggage if the bellman's busy, to providing them with safety pins, towels, making sure they have anything in the room they need, we do it all. One of the ways that I set myself apart from my competitor is that our first answer to a guest is always absolutely. Now we may follow with absolutely, let me walk you over here to the person who may help you, but it's always a start. The first word is always absolutely. So we do everything for the hotel, and the most successful partnerships are ones where they consider us a team member versus a third party. And the group that we have now, everyone feels that way. We're all a team, we work together.
That's great.
Yeah. So where does the the revenue component tie in? So with the concierge aspect, you're selling tickets, you're selling theme park tickets, yeah. tours, experiences. How does that all tie into the operation of what you do?
So if you're asking about the different revenue streams, if I connect two partners of the hotel and a maintenance partner, for example, they will give me a small commission, the maintenance partner, for connecting them. When it comes to the concierge, we simply make our tickets from the price, the net price that we pay for a theme park ticket and what we sell it. It's been a little challenging, as you can imagine, in this environment where the capacities are so low. So we have most of my hotels currently, the hotels we operate in, are full capacity. The hotels are 100% booked. But those guests, if they haven't already received their tickets for certain theme parks, can't get a theme park ticket. The great news about it, though, Josh, has been these smaller attractions that weren't getting the volume before are having the opportunity to show what they can do. Because we're able to say, I know you really wanted to take your child here, but we have this other option for you and we really want you to explore it and come back and let us know. And the response has been great. I think people have forgotten about all those small attractions because there's so many big theme parks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'd like to switch gears now just for a little bit, and we've danced around this a little bit, but I'm dying to ask about when you and Josh worked together. So you, and maybe we'll mute Josh for a little bit, but just give us a little sense of what Josh was like to work with back in the day when you worked with him at Universal.
A little over 10 years ago, right? 10
years ago or so. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, 10 years ago. Well, the first word that comes to mind is fun. So I can picture exactly where Josh sat, what he did, all of the jokes that he would say. And even if I was in the back of the room, I could hear him. So that's the first word I would say. But the best thing I'll say about Josh is he came onto the team, the guest service team, and wanted to learn. He didn't come in and say, I already know how to provide guest service. I've got this. Everybody, just leave me alone. He came in and he would, at the end of the day, when everybody was leaving, he would come in my office and say, I just want to pick your brain. I have this guest today. What could I have done better? How could I have done this differently? What would have helped them? And very quickly, he went up the chain as the one everyone went to and said, hey, Josh, how do I handle this? I have a lady on hold. And I really credit that to his willingness to learn. So, but the fun is the thing I remember first when I think about him.
Okay. Thank you for that. That's cool to, it's really cool to hear that, Matt, and that means a lot to me. And great to know about the fun aspect too. Now I'm trying to think, what were the jokes that I would be telling?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have to be careful now what I share. But I don't know if you remember this, but we've had some interesting guests at Universal.
Yes.
Certainly.
Yes, I do remember.
And you were the king of getting off the phone without giving any information about the guest at all, or finishing serving the guest downstairs in the lobby or the window, and coming up and having a spin on your story. And so the spin on the story was always wonderful, because it can be difficult when you have a full park and people are a little frustrated. They didn't realize they would have to wait to hear that same concern over and over again for 10 hours in a day. And you had a way of hanging up and making that fun. And I don't know if you remember this, Josh, but the funniest day I think ever was Halloween Day. And I had been over to Islands of Adventure and you were at Universal Studios, Florida. And I walked into the office and I looked over and I said, oh my gosh, everybody dressed up for Halloween. You guys had called me to come over. And then I said, oh, he's dressed as me. And then I looked and everyone was dressed as me. So everyone from the gentleman who's in his 70s to the new operator who just started had dressed up as Linda Rose. And I was a little concerned about some of the makeup that I saw. I was like, oh, maybe I need to change my style. But they had wigs and they had makeup and scarves on and my name tag. Everyone had taped over their name tag with my name. And those are the kinds of things that I think that I remember that we did up there that were all you guys, because I'm not a comedian, that just made it fun and a job that could have been challenging.
And was challenging. But I think you make a really good point of we really, and under your leadership, we were able to have this very upbeat office environment in what was a pretty stressful job at times, especially when, oh, there was a new large attraction opening, or if it was the week between Christmas and New Year's, or when we were anticipating higher volumes of guest feedback coming in and concerns. But we always, I remember, tried to really rise above that stress level and just kind of be able to have that energy and camaraderie with one another, that we're all, we're all helping each other out. There was actually one memory in particular that that just came to mind, is that sometimes guests would send a flat Stanley. Do you remember that? Like a little paper cutout, like a little like I don't know, animated man. And those were actually like the really fun times, because it wasn't about just like resolving a complaint for an angry guest, but it was something that, all right, we got to take this little cartoon character and go around the park and show him having fun. So I remember there was one time you and I went out from our office over at Universal Studios over to Islands of Adventure. And I remember like we were getting pictures of it with the Hulk and like with various attractions, and some guests approached us and started talking, and they said, like, oh, is this what you guys normally do all day? And I remember saying something like, no, we're just excited to be out of the office. And then I remember for a second, like, my heart sank. I was like, I just said, I'm excited to get out of the office right in front of my boss. And then immediately you just said, yeah, out of the office. And like, you gave me a big high five. So I just remember that as even during those really stressful times, that there was always this, I guess, levity to it, that this constant reminder that, yeah, we're working in a theme park. We're working in a very fun environment where people are coming on vacation, and we need to regularly remember that ourselves. So I'm curious, actually, if there are any guest stories that stick out to you in terms of stories that you like to share from guest satisfaction, and it probably, might be a recovery effort that you were a part of, or something that you walked away from feeling very fulfilled that you were able to make that memory and make that day for the guest.
So I don't know, Josh, if you'll consider this making a memory. Well, I guess it is, but I use this story in training classes now, and it's serious, but a guest, I don't know if you remember, maybe 3 or 4 years in, there was that big accident on I-95, and they had shut I-95 down because so many people were killed. It was a horrible accident. Well, right after that, about 3 weeks later, I received a phone call from a guest that we had assisted to help her get in the park. I think her tickets were incorrect. Something happened with her voucher, and we just helped her. It wasn't a big thing. It was what you and I did every day, right? Helping guests to get into the park and enjoy themselves. And I think maybe we gave her a single attraction pass to make up for her time. Well, she called me, and I saw, and I won't give her name just for her privacy. I said, oh, Mrs. So-and-so, is everything okay? And I had remembered her well. It was a huge family. And she said, yes, but I wanted to tell you what happened and what you did for our family. And I said, sure, talk to me. Her son had actually died in that car accident, in that big collision, on his way home to North Carolina. And she said that they had not, I didn't remember this, but that they had planned to have him turn around and go back to the hotel with his girlfriend. But because we were able to help them get discounted tickets and get into the park, they had his last day of his life in the theme park. And they had all these pictures and memories. And she told me that they had put the pictures all over his memory board at the funeral from Universal. And she said, I was heartbroken to hear her story. And she said, no, you don't understand. We will always have that day because you took the time to listen to us and help us. And it doesn't matter how many times I tell this story, I get goosebumps, mm-hmm. because I don't think we realize as service providers, every day we have that opportunity. I realize that's an extreme situation, but every day there's people who come for birthdays that are disappointed that we can help turn around. There's guests who really want us to sell them the right ticket, not just sell them the ticket that's going to make us the most money, but the one that's going to be best for their family. And I believe that true guest service is a craft, and it's a craft of empathy and concern for other people.
Yeah, I got goosebumps hearing that story. So thank you for sharing that. And I also agree that there's so much empathy and compassion that goes into really, truly great guest service, that it's not just about a department. It's not just about a class. It's really about how a person carries themselves and their personality and their background. And all of that comes to life when they are put in those situations where they can help and care for people. And that goes right back to your days as a nurse. Right, just caring for people and being somebody that can be there to help people. I want to go a little deeper into that, but there's a question that I actually had for Josh that I wanted to get to before we go a little bit deeper into that. And this is, Josh, not one of the questions that we planned, but since we were talking about you working with Linda, were there any specific lessons that you remember learning from Linda that you've taken and still use today?
Countless. And actually, yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. When I, Linda, I don't know, if you know this or not, but I mean, when I think back to the skills that I've developed related to guest service, related to service recovery, driving guest experience, I very quickly connect the dots to that time that we worked together. So first, I just want to let you know the impact that you've had on me and my career. So I want to actually thank you for that. And then Matt, I'll answer the question here. So much of it had to do with, and I guess I will tie in a lot of what you've said of empathy and being able to really bring that into the conversation. And that when you are resolving a service failure for a guest, you're not, if they send an email, you're not calling them to fight with them. You're calling them because you are the person who can fix the problem. And if you call them with this solemn, you know, very, I don't know, monotone kind of voice or personality, then the guest is going to reflect that in their conversation, which may have been the tone of their initial correspondence. But if you call them to say, hey, I am the theme park calling you because I'm excited that I get to talk to you because you had a bad experience. And guess what? At the end of this phone call, you're going to be just as excited as I am right now. And then it's about really, you know, filling in the blanks and being able to get there. But I think just, being able to observe and watch you do that for guests. And I don't know if you did this on purpose or not, but there were so many times you'd be on the phone with a guest, your door was wide open and you'd be talking, you know, not totally quietly, you know, not, you know, interrupting anyone else on the phone. But I mean, if anyone on the team wanted to listen to how Linda was dealing with the situation at that time, you just have to listen and then be able to emulate that back and then see the immediate results of using, and it's not just the words, it's not just the phrases, but it's that tone and it's that energy that you bring to the conversation, that you have the ability to control that conversation with the tone and the energy that you have. And there were many times where guests want to escalate the call, not even to my supervisor or my manager, but they would just immediately say, I want to talk to the CEO. And I would go into that and say, okay, before I get you to the CEO, let me see if I can help fix your problem because I think that I can. And every time I was able to, I never transferred a call to Bill Davis. You know, I don't know if he would have been available to take the call or not, but it never got to that point because of the mindset that you distilled upon that team. So Matt, does that answer the question?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I, Linda, I get to talk to Josh a lot about guest service. And I know when he says that a lot of it ties back to what you taught and the kind of team you ran, I can absolutely see how those dots are connected. So I wanted to, you know, just ask him what his thoughts were on that. So thank you. Thank you for that. Again, Linda, I want to go back to your story about how you had such an impact on people, because I think a lot of times when people get a job in a guest services type role, they have the desire to want to help and they've got a heart for service. At least that's why they get into that role. But I think what I find sometimes is that sometimes their lack of know-how gets in the way of their desire. And so I'm curious from your standpoint, how do you make sure that they know all those different options and all those different techniques so that they can serve the guests in the best possible way and serve their heart just as much as they're serving the guest?
So it's interesting. Thank you, by the way, Josh. That was so humbling. When you get to the point in your career where I am, you do start looking back and hope you did something right to make a difference with someone else. So thank you.
I wanted but to when make it sure comes that I communicated that to you in the interview. So good.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
well, right. That's why I tried to hire you away from Universal, but you wouldn't come. But anyway.
That's another topic.
So you had bigger plans, obviously, with what you're doing now. When I think about team members, it was actually Josh, and I don't know if you remember this. It's funny, we keep saying, I don't know if you remember. I didn't remember doing that with you with Black Stanley, but that's a great story. There was a guest who was especially challenging and had asked to speak to the highest person on the property, and there were several VPs around, and they all looked at me, and I was like, okay, I guess he's the highest person. But truly the right person to talk to that guest. And you were with me. And we talk to the guest, and she ended up hugging us. I actually still communicate with that guest as well. It's funny how many guests I'm still friends with. We ended up hugging, and she was great. She was fine. And you said to me, how did you do that? You were somewhat new. And I said, you know, I'm not sure. I wasn't able to give him a really good answer. And he was the one who made me go back. And the next time I helped a guest, I said to you, next time I help a guest, I'll think about it while I'm doing it. And I realized there was a certain way I tilted my head that showed empathy. And there was a way that I made a little sympathetic noise that sort of showed them I was listening without interrupting. You know, I'd be like, And so they knew I really felt their pain. And I watched my facial expressions. And I actually have been able to now document all of that because of you saying you need to write this down so that we can know what to do. And it's really helped me in my career to be a better leader, to be able to say, not just to watch, which I think is great, Josh, thank you for that, but here's what I do and here's why I do it. And here's why I lower my head when people are talking so that they do feel like I'm submissive to them, not a servant, you know, on my knees, but just I'm listening and I want to help.
Yeah. No, that's.
Did that answer your question?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And I've noticed that Josh tilts his head sometimes when he wants to show that he's listening to me. So, yeah, it definitely helps.
Even know if I do that or not, or why I do that, and maybe now we can like connect those dots there. Yeah, and no, I think it's a good point that Matt brought up as far as the desire and the intent, and then the actual ability to do that. And I think it starts with that desire and probably asking those questions of how did you do that? Let's unpack and dissect every single aspect of how that conversation went. And there's so many different components of it, that whether it is that specific tactic of I'm going to tilt my head this certain way or I'm just going to be in this mindset and being this attitude that, I'm very appreciative to have the opportunity to work with this guest and be able to do that. So I don't know if I remember that particular scenario specifically, but I do remember one time where, like I said, you were on the phone with a guest and I could tell they were being particularly challenging, and I casually walked by and wasn't even coming into your office, but I walked by and you quickly looked up and then went back to the guest and you said, yes, and Josh is going to take such good care of you. And I thought, what did I just get myself into? And then you explained to me what had happened. You said, all right, this guest, I think going back to that question of deserving, I said, we're getting a lot of the same complaint, and we are, we have this methodical way of addressing it. This particular guest needs a lot more than the typical service recovery elements that we've done. And you laid it out to me, and I remember saying, all right, this is a big deal. This is going to be me getting out of the office, and not because I'm walking around with a flat Stanley. It involved kind of going to the hotel, escorting them, to the park. It was actually, I think, a 3-day service recovery effort process. But I will say that I'm really glad that I was a part of that, because when people ask about the best complaint resolution story that I have, that is 100% what comes to mind. And it actually really just results back to me walking by your office and you saying, Josh is going to be the one to take care of you. So, tying it in with leadership or being able to delegate, that recovery effort. And I don't know if you remember the specific example that I'm referring to, yeah. But it was a pretty big deal and it took a lot of, trust for you to be able to kind of assign that to me, to be able to take on. So I knew that there was a lot, I would say, kind of riding on that with that. So I, part of trust, I'm guessing, has to do with empowerment and being able to give those tools to your employees to be able to do that. And I guess the question that comes out of that is, how did you know that, I was going to make the right decisions, both whether from that direct tactic standpoint or just, from the overarching standpoint, and not just me in general, but how do you know when you can offload kind of a very big endeavor like that to someone and know that they're going to do it right?
Well, you are the right person for those situations, absolutely. And I knew that from your history. But I think you don't know until you allow people to make mistakes. One of the things, I probably have this conversation two or three times a week now and throughout my career, is it's okay. That's how you learn. You won't do that again. And so you have to give people that ability. It's not brain surgery, right? We're not going to hurt. That's one of the great things about not being a nurse and working this, is I can't kill anyone with giving them the wrong amount of insulin helping with this job. And so I would say that constantly, and just allow people to make the mistake and realize that's not the way I want to handle it next time. I want to do it differently. And I think you were so quick, to, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, to learn. I remember you would put your feet up on the table. Do you remember this? And some of your peers did not care for that. And at first I would be like, put your feet down. And then I realized when you were in that position, your voice, your tone to the guests was like you were sitting on the couch talking to them and relaxed. And I was like, is this work for him? Let him go. Leave him alone. He's not bothering anyone. And I think that's part of it too. It's allowing people to find their own style. It doesn't have to be your style as long as they get the same result and their heart is in the craft. And I do feel so excited that every day I can be a hero to someone, to a guest. And I believe it's a craft, and not everyone can do it, but everyone can learn through someone who does how to do it.
Yeah. I love how you talk about it being a craft, because I think you put so much more emphasis and passion into a craft than you would a job. So I love that. And I also love how you talk about, you know, allowing people to make mistakes. And I think this goes back to one of our previous topics, where you don't necessarily know what people are going to say. And when you empower someone, you don't know what they're going to say. And I've been doing quite a few sessions on that recently. And that can be really scary to some people. But I think if they put it in the perspective that you're talking about, where we're not going to kill anyone, right? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? We might give them the wrong ticket, or they might get upset, but we can recover that because we've got the right attitude. We've got the right outlook. You know, I think that's a much more healthy way to approach it than the folks who are trying to control so much because they don't know what people are going to say, right? And they try to focus on every single word and give a script to everything that people are going to do because they're afraid of what they might do when they let their personality out. So I really appreciate the things that you've been saying about that. But I would also, you know, again, kind of roll this into a question. If you were talking to some managers right now about empowerment and about how it actually helps them as managers, what would you say to them?
And you're asking me for their team members, how to empower their team members?
Right. If Josh and I were managers and you were telling us about how important empowerment was, what's in it for me as a manager to be able to empower someone?
You taught me the what's in it for me. I don't know if you remember that, but I love that. And I use that often. I emulate you as much as possible. So I think what's most important, if you're a manager and you allow your team to be empowered, you have freedom to do other things. So I am not currently going to my desk every day because I have a team I completely trust. They're completely empowered so that I can build the business. And I think that being able to allow people to make mistakes, you can tell them what to do, or you can allow them to make the mistake themselves, and then they will never do it again. So I think the freedom for the manager, the reason a manager would do that, is that they can do their job well. They can do other things besides babysit and try to control people. I don't believe in scripts at all. I believe in giving a few words, few verbiage. Here's how you could start. Here's some ideas, especially for someone new. And I do have a few words that are no-no words. So we don't say no, and we don't say don't, and we don't say our policy. So telling a guest who's upset, well, it's our policy, it is not helpful. There's nothing good that's going to come out of that. So those are my don't phrases, but I don't have any specific scripts, and I really don't care for them. Mm-hmm.
Another don't phrase or don't word that I learned from you was unfortunately. So that is, yes. I think Matt has probably heard me rant on about, I think I've even developed my own personal hatred for that word and reasons for not using it. So, because it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't fix a problem. It doesn't in any way. So,
no, yeah. It's so interesting you say that, because I have one new team member and I watched her interact with the guests, And afterwards, we talked about what she could do better and what she felt like she could do better herself. And unfortunately, was the biggest thing, because if you start off with, unfortunately, we only have two transportation routes to Disney, instead of, well, we actually have two offers for you. You can go at 9 o'clock or you can go at 10 o'clock. It really is a different mindset for the guest, because you start with unfortunately.
It's the same information, but it's a completely different spin on it.
Yes, I'm already ready to file a complaint because you told me there was something unfortunate that happened, when really, aren't you lucky you have two choices that are free? Hop on one. So it's a really good point.
Yeah. Well, and I go back to something you guys were talking about when you said, you know, I'm going to hand this off to Josh and he's going to take really good care of you. That's much different than saying, let me transfer you to Josh.
Unfortunately, you know? Josh is going
to. Because unfortunately,
I don't want to talk to you anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that word choice combined with the authenticity is really what helps put people at ease.
I agree with that. I think that's why not just writing a list of what to say in a script will ever help you be acceptable in guest service, right? There has to be the heart, and then there has to be the empowerment, and then the training and the willingness. They all go together.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think you have to give people a reason. I remember when we started together at the front gate, Josh, we had to really help people understand how important guest services was to the company. There wasn't really this full understanding that we were the stopgap for someone going somewhere else, right? To call someone that might charge a lot of money. Or we were the person, the face of the true face of Universal, because we saw the guest in the most need. And I think teaching people that and giving them a purpose for providing service, and not just finding only the people who already have a heart for it, but the ones who would have a heart if they understood the difference they make, I think is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would actually say that was very cool for me, because I came from a number of years working in attractions prior to that. So they were already in the park. They were already hopefully enjoying their day. And all I had to do was sustain that by providing an efficient, operation and get them on the attraction. And then there was so much more ownership of the guest experience, kind of, moving into, and this is not to, dismiss the value of attractions operations. Obviously, it's such a critical component of our industry, but being able to kind of, like you said, that stopgap of somebody who might never visit again, and then being able to really save that guest, be able to get them to commit again. So I think it's, yeah, like you said, it's so important. Linda, this has been just an amazing conversation. So glad that we had the opportunity to have you on the podcast. I feel like we could just keep talking all day, and probably share many more examples or many more memories of guest service stories that we had together back then. But in the meantime, if people want to learn more about Hospitality Connect, if they want to get a hold of you directly, where would you send them?
We have a website, Hospitality Connect Florida, those three words, and all the information about how to reach me and how to reach one of the managers that works for me is on that site, as well as my partners, all of the partners who are available.
Excellent. We'll make sure to include all that in the show notes. Any lasting words of wisdom or, anything to sum up everything we talked about today for our listeners and our viewers to take away?
I don't think I have any words of wisdom, but I will say that when you build a family, I look at you two and I think of you as family. And even if we haven't connected in a year, when we see each other, it's family. I think that is so important for our guests to feel part of that family and for our teams to feel part of that family. And I believe that they do. And I appreciate what you said about tone. I think tone is 90% of success. So that was a great, great comment. And I'm going to write that down. I'm going to keep that knowledge.
We're going to tweet.
Thank you very much for having me today. I really feel honored. I can't believe an hour went by. That was the fastest hour ever.
Yeah.
super fast. But Linda, this has been fabulous. And I hope we get to see you again very, very soon in person, potentially at a Florida Attractions Association conference or something. But until then, thank you again for your time. And for everybody out there watching and listening, just remember, we are all attraction pros. Thanks for listening to the Attraction Pros podcast.
Make sure to subscribe so you can tune in when new episodes release. And even better, please leave us a review on iTunes.
For more information, visit attractionpros.com.